Dave Emery here. This is, for the record, program number 869, The Assassination of Olaf Palme, Part 2. This is being recorded on October 16th of the year 2015. We are going to basically plunge right back into what we were talking about in, for the record, 868. The program is comprised of the reading and analysis of a very important article about the assassination of Olaf Palme that was published in the Danish publication Press, issue number 37, and that is from December of 1988. It was co-authored, actually, by Henrik Kruger, the author of The Great Heroin Coup, a book which we have used many times, and Agnete the Star, A-G-N-E-T-E, last name capital V as in Victor, I-S as in Sam, T-A-R as in Roger. The title of the article is The Wackel Trail, subtitled, and I'm not going to attempt the Danish, On the Trail of a Murder is the translation. This is a very complex analysis presented here by Henrik Kruger, and it is past a point indeterminate. I would note that Swedish Prime Minister Olaf Palme was shot to death on February 28th of 1986, almost 30 years ago, and up to this point, his murder remains officially unsolved. I think that in and of itself casts, basically indicates that some extremely powerful and frankly very sinister forces were involved in Palme's killing. Again, this is the prime minister of a major Western European country who was shot to death in downtown Stockholm. His killing has never been officially solved. In our first, in this analysis, we talked about a number of things, not only Operation Condor, an assassination consortium that was run by a number of Latin American dictatorships in the 1970s. They were aided in this not only by what I call the Underground Reich, but by a powerful element of the CIA. In that context, one of the most important figures and one of its most sinister operations officers, the late Theodore Shackley, a man who, from an historical standpoint, is as important as he was powerful and very much feared even by his allies in CIA. Shackley is of Polish extraction, joined the army just after World War II, and was then posted as an army counterintelligence agent to Germany, where he also worked when he was with CIA. In that regard, he undoubtedly worked very closely with the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi spy outfit. That was the Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit, comprised at that point largely of SS and Sicherheitsdienst-connected agents. It jumped to the CIA and became the CIA's Department of Russian and Eastern European Affairs, and ultimately became the de facto NATO intelligence organization and finally morphed into the West German Foreign Intelligence Service, the BND or Bundesnachrichtendienst. Shackley was involved with a number of activities, including assassinations in Latin America. He was deeply involved with the use of various commercial activities, including and especially narcotics trafficking, in order to finance his operations. And Shackley was deeply involved with the Iran-Contra affair. Again, this is a very complex essay, and we read the first part of it into the record yesterday. The entire article, or almost the entire article, is available in the printed description for the record 868, and will be in the description for 869 as well. The overall sort of cement or milieu that unites the various elements that appear in connection with the apparent conspiracy to assassinate Olaf Palme all track back to what used to be called WACL, the World Anti-Communist League, now most inappropriately named the World League for Freedom and Democracy, or something along those lines. It essentially has as its core the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, formed by Adolf Hitler in 1943 as the Committee of Subjugated Nations. It was a consortium of Eastern European fascist nations and parties that were associated not only with the Third Reich and were allied with it, but were united by their links to the SS. We looked at this most recently in, for the record, 777. Actually, we also looked at 778. The World Anti-Communist League also involved the Asian People's Anti-Communist League, and one of the people with long associations not only to WACL, but also to threats against Palme and criminal activity in not only Sweden, but in Latin America on behalf of Operation Condor, was a fellow named Miro Barasic, B-A-R-A-S-I-C. He also used the alias of Tony Saric, S-A-R-I-C. He and an associate kidnapped and tortured to death the Yugoslavian ambassador to Sweden. He was then sentenced to prison. However, a plane was hijacked, and in exchange for not blowing up the passengers of the plane, Barasic was given his freedom. He flew to Latin America, where he became a top aide, first to Mr. Coronel, the head of the Paraguayan Security Services. Barasic worked for Operation Condor and eventually became a security guard for the Paraguayan ambassador to the U.S. in Washington, D.C. Probably the best known of the Operation Condor killings was the assassination of Orlando Letelier in Washington, D.C. in 1976. Files recently declassified prove the what everybody has really known, the Chilean Secret Service's links to that killing. The links to that killing and other Operation Condor killings go way beyond the DINA, the Chilean Secret Service. I would note that George H.W. Bush was head of CIA when that killing took place in Washington, D.C. What we're going to do in the last part of our reading of the Henrik Krüger essay is to take a look at some Scandinavian fascist connections, including Swedish Nazi and fascist elements, who in turn not only were in the same, and here's that word again, milieu, as Tony Saric, a.k.a. Miro Barasic, or really Miro Barasic, a.k.a. Tony Saric, but they also hated Olaf Palme, who was a human rights advocate and had been supportive of the Sandinistas in Nicaragua and Allende in Chile, among other progressive governments, some of which were Marxist. For that reason, Palme was deeply hated and targeted by international fascist networks, including WACL and Operation Condor. After concluding the Henrik Krüger essay, we're going to take a look at indications that the late author Stig Larsson, the author of the Millennium series made into several hit movies, was investigating this same milieu in connection with the death of Olof Palme. We're also going to take a look at the Bofors firm. That was a munitions maker that was shipping weapons to Iran, and among the motives that may very well have spurred the Wacko milieu and the Operation Condor milieu and the Shackley milieu heavily overlapped to kill Olof Palme was his interdiction of the Bofors shipments to Iran. Bofors has a very deep history, and we're going to take a look at the powerful Swedish industrialists who were allied with the Third Reich and that also prospered very heavily under the auspices of the post-World War II Bormann Capital Network. So once again, we are going to return to this essay again by Henrik Kruger and Agnete Wistar from Press Magazine's issue number 37 from December of 1988. The Wacko Trail on the Trail of a Murder. And skipping down, we read, the Barisic Trail leads directly into the Wacko network. All of the Croatian exiles around Barisic were Wacko people and part of the same labyrinthine underworld which Shackley and the Iran-Contra team had drawn upon. The Bofors Trail also leads into Wacko. This, however, is not the only trail with Swedish connections that points toward Wacko. At the time of the Palme murder, two neo-Nazis with international getaway route expertise and connections to Wacko as well were in Sweden. We need to backwind the calendar to April of 1978, when the infamous Washington, D.C. Wacko Conference was in session. As mentioned previously, Barisic was present under the pseudonym Tony Saric, S-A-R-I-C. Despite that, many at the conference must have recognized him. Among those who did, no doubt, were two Swedes, Ake, a.k.a. J. Eck, last name E.K., and Anders Larsson, L-A-R-S-S-O-N, as well as the Norwegian Tor Petter Hadland, first name T-O-R, middle name P-E-T-T-E-R, last name H-A-D-L-A-N-D. The remainder of this article will deal with these three Scandinavian connections. We will take, in turn, Tor Petter Hadland first, along with his connections to another Norwegian Nazi, Erik Blucher, B-L-U-C-H-E-R. Hadland was the leader of the Norwegian neo-Nazi party group, the Norwegian Front Stormtroopers. When the Norwegian Front Stormtroopers began in 1977 to appear in connection to Wacko, it was Hadland who represented these Norwegian Nazis at the Wacko meetings held around the world. Hadland was Erik Blucher's right-hand man. Blucher, as leader of the Norwegian neo-Nazis, had several times been involved in scandals involving both military training of young neo-Nazis and illegal weapons in Norway. In 1979, along with Hadland and other European Nazis, Blucher attempted to stage a power coup within the European branch of Wacko. A more moderate group, however, was victorious. The two neo-Nazis were forced to leave Wacko officially, but continued to work within Wacko behind the scenes. Then, in 1981, Blucher's and Hadland's paths diverged for 2 years. Hadland took up residence in Örebro, Sweden, and Blucher traveled to London, where he quickly contacted the neo-Nazi circles who had operated a getaway route central called Brown Aid. This escape route center helped, among others, 23 Italian terrorists. Two of these Italians had been sought in connection with the massive bombing of the Bologna train station in Italy. This getaway routing center was exposed in 1981 by the British television station Granada. After the exposure, the center needed both a new international getaway travel secretary to be found and to be built up again. According to British sources. Eric Blucher became the new secretary. In 1983, the English police had started to suspect Blucher, and he traveled to Sweden, where his old friend, Tor Petter Hadland, had procured him an apartment. Blucher signed his name as Eric Olsen, O-L-S-E-N. Exactly what Blucher, the escape route expert, and Hadland, the organizer, did after that, we can only speculate about. Certain of the circumstances surrounding their further movements are unknown, but it has been possible to sketch and outline them. In November of 1984, Tor Petter Hadland abandoned Örebro and fled to an apartment located at 32 Blockstenvägen in Stockholm's suburb of Handen, H-A-N-D-E-N. Blucher often stayed at the same address. Less than 1 year later, in September of 1985, Blucher was living in a slum clearance apartment in Helsingborg at 15C Blakugatan. That's B-L-A-K-W-U-L-L-A-G-A-T-A-N. This address is not far from the border crossing point in Denmark, although Blucher was never there.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Blucher additionally established a firm named Edelweiss Survival. He maintained a post box in Snekkersten near Helsingør, Denmark. Edelweiss Survival had two addresses, box 7904 in Sundbyberg, and another at P.O. Box 13026, Helsingborg, Sweden. Perhaps it was a coincidence that the getaway route expert Blucher had apartments and post box addresses in Stockholm and on the border between Sweden and Denmark. Perhaps it was not a coincidence. The well-informed British magazine Searchlight reported in 1985 that a secret center for European neo-Nazi activities had been established in Stockholm. Former Wacko people were involved. Some evidence indicated that Hadland and Blucher were involved. Whether or not they had anything to do with the murder of Olof Palme on February 28, 1986, is not known. It does seem strange, though, that none of the Swedish authorities had any interest in the two Nazis' expertise in escape routes internationally and of their organizational capabilities. One thing, however, we do know. 3 months after the death of Palme, Hadland gave notice on his apartment outside of Stockholm and moved back home to Norway. At the same time, Blucher once again changed his name to Tor Erik Nielsen, and he too gave notice at his apartment in Helsingborg. The getaway route experts had found new pastures. Again, that was in the immediate aftermath of the death or the murder of Olof Palme. Another interesting development paralleled the activities of Blucher and Hadland. It took place around yet another Wacko bigwig, the Swedish Anders Larsson, L-A-R-S-S-O-N. We turn back the clock to 1978 once again to the Wacko Conference in D.C. for the last time, when both Tor Petter Hadland and Miro Barisic, under the false name of Tony Sarich, were in attendance. Anders Larsson also was at this Washington Conference of Wacko. Anders Larsson is a strange gentleman. It was he, paradoxically, that had maneuvered Blucher, Hadland, and their new Nazi comrades out of Wacko. It was also Larsson who was one of the principal people behind the preparation of the Wacko Blue Document, unquote, which disclosed the Nazi affiliations of some of the more clean-appearing Wacko members. Many things point, however, to Larsson's war against the neo-Nazis having been waged for strategic purposes. As one member of the circle around him wrote in a letter dated February 25, 1981, it seems as if Larsson operated under the motto, our Nazis are good Nazis, but their Nazis are bad Nazis. Or to say it another way, Lawson's battle against the Nazis was not ideological, but rather exclusively a power struggle. Lawson had good relations, for example, with the Nazi collaborators from the ABN, the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, which is an umbrella organization under Lackel. ABN is the same organization to which Miro Barasich belonged. Lawson was known for being an ardent Palme hater. He never tried to hide his contempt for the Swedish Prime Minister, who he thought deserved to be exterminated. As far back as the 1970s, Lawson, with the help of American contacts, had arranged for large anti-Palme demonstrations in the United States. Lawson was Lackel's general secretary in Sweden. He withdrew from that position in 1983. He often signed his letters with the signature Anti-Palme, unquote. 2 months prior to Palme's murder, Lawson, along with a right-wing prison officer, surveilled the Swedish Prime Minister during the funeral of Alva Myrdal, M-Y-R-D-A-L. On February 20th, Lawson delivered a mysterious letter to the Swedish State Ministry. Inside the envelope lay a newspaper headline with the text, Palme dead, unquote. 1 week later, Olof Palme was shot and killed. The Palme-hating Anders Lawson was, in fact, the very first person investigated following the murder. But why should Lawson deliver a warning letter to Palme if he himself was involved in the murder conspiracy? An explanation could be that Lawson knew something via his old Lackel connections and acted as he did as part of a power struggle in extreme right circles. He may have wanted to warn of the assassination plans then, but later was afraid to tell anything about it. Swedish journalists and Palme investigators say that today Lawson appears very frightened and has all but gone underground. When Anders Lawson retired from his Lackel work in 1983, his functions in Sweden were taken up by the police agent Ake J. Eck, again, first name A-K-E, middle initial J, and last name E-K. Eck was a seasoned Lackel member. Press has earlier demonstrated in issue number 35 various connections between the Swedish police and Lackel vis-a-vis the so-called police trail. Ake J. Eck, who was a well-known extremist right-winger, could be another one of these connections. Eck was also at the Washington Lackel Conference back in 1978. There he had various dealings side-by-side with Tor Peter Hadland, Anders Lawson, Miro Barasich, numerous other neo-Nazis, torturers, executioners, and members of death squads. Eck had been an instructor of psychology at the Swedish Police Academy for a number of years. Thus, at this academy, he was on the pedagogical side of things. It was in this intellectual shadowland that a long succession of the notorious Norrmalm police members were trained. Norrmalm Police Watch District No. 1 is in the spotlight today precisely because of these right-wing police agents' peculiar movements in the neighborhood of the crime scene on the night of Palme's death. The last couple of sentences again. It was in this intellectual shadowland that a long succession of the notorious Norrmalms, N-O-R-R-M-A-L-M, police members were trained. Norrmalm Police Watch District No. 1 is in the spotlight today precisely because of these right-wing police agents' peculiar movements in the neighborhood of the crime scene on the night of Palme's death. There are indications that some of the police have had connections to Nazi circles. One of the policemen had a Nazi helmet in his apartment, which also contained an unspecified collection of radio communication equipment. There are many strange stories surrounding Palme's assassination. One example is a tale about a Yugoslavian soldier of fortune by the name of Ivan von Berchan, B-E-R-C-H-A-N. 1 month after Palme's death, von Berchan allegedly approached SAPO, Sweden's intelligence agency. The soldier of fortune related that a CIA agent using the cover name George Moran, M-O-R-A-N, had been offered a contract for $2 million to murder Palme. He had known the CIA agent from Libya at the end of the 1970s. This was just at the time that personnel from the secret team was training terrorists in Libya. With this connection, we are back to Shackley and the people behind the Iran-Contra machinations. The SAPO agent, again, SAPO, S-A-P-O, is the Swedish intelligence service. The SAPO agent who the soldier of fortune approached was Alf Carlson, K-A-R-L-S-S-O-N. Carlson asserts that von Berchan first approached him after the murder of Palme. That, however, directly contradicts a statement from Stockholm's mayor, Inger Bavin, B-A-V-E-N, and his secretary. According to both Inger Bavin and his secretary, Ivan von Berchan communicated the same information 1 month before Palme was killed. It was the SAPO agent Carlson who, in 1984, had originally denounced the small Kurdish party PKK as a terrorist organization. In addition, it was he who persistently supported Hans Holmer, H-O-L-M-E-R, in his hunt for the Kurds involved in the assassination of Palme. And lastly, it was Carlson who had been on watch at SAPO the day the murder of Palme was committed. He therefore must have known that by afternoon, Palme had called off the supervision of the SAPO agents, which usually functioned as his bodyguards. Alf Carlson is known to be part of the Swedish far right. He has subsequently resigned from his position within the Swedish intelligence service. He currently works in former SAPO chief P.G. Vinges, or Vinges, V-I-N-G-E's, private firm location in Stockholm, Vinger Protection AB. The firm exercises social control activities within corporations. In the newspaper Svenska Dagbladet, Carlson described Ingvar Bratt, a former Bofors employee who disclosed the Bofors smuggling to Iran, as an example of, quote, a catastrophe that took place because of a human leak in an otherwise perfect security system, unquote. It was just those types of human leaks that Vinga and Carlson, with their consulting firm's expertise, set out to stop. Vinga had for many years been one of Sweden's most zealous Palme haters. His difficulties collaborating with Palme caused Vinga's resignation as chief of SAPO in 1970. It was Vinga, during his time as SAPO chief, who allegedly branded Palme, quote, a security risk, unquote. These circumstances do not prove that Carlson was involved in the planning and eventual murder of Palme. However, can one reasonably rely on the Swedish authorities to investigate those trails which involved these very same Swedish authorities? Clearly, what is needed is to start again from the beginning. It is necessary to attempt to assemble the loose ends that appear to have been overlooked in the confusion. Necessary to see with fresh eyes the motives, logic, and possible trails. And as this article sought to provide analysis for, start over again with a look toward the right-wing extremist organization named WACL. Precisely because this organization is extensive enough and motivated to have intervened in all of the major trails in connection to the murder of Olof Palme. And indeed, note that this private security firm, Vinga Protection AB, was involved apparently with the Bofors firm and described the leaking of Bofors arms shipments to Iran as a catastrophe. And note that the head of that firm was formerly chief of the Swedish intelligence service, and that he hated Olof Palme, and that he was also networking with a guy named Alf Carlson, another SAPO agent. SAPO, again, being the Swedish intelligence service. Now, speaking of Alf Larsson, we note here in a footnote to that article, Larsson is a close friend of former South African agent Bertel Wedden, who was beginning to come under media investigation. He had been the source of disinformation on the Turkish right-wing press, in the Turkish right-wing press, about the Kurdish trail.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing in, but by no means exclusively, economic and financial matters.
And before we get into some explorations of Bofors and the Swedish industrial milieu to which it belongs, and in turn, the larger European Third Reich and Bormann Capital Network connections of those firms and associated individuals, the late Stieg Larsson, the author of the Millennium series, some very popular novels about a computer hacker who becomes a heroine after foiling a number of insidious elements. There were three movies made, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet Nest, and I forget the third off the top of my head, but it was, the movies and the books were quite a sensation. And the late Stieg Larsson, who died of a heart attack at the age of 50, had been investigating the assassination of Olof Palme and had been focusing on a number of people, including the aforementioned Bertel Wedden, who had been a South African intelligence officer and was allegedly involved in the Palme killing, according to Stieg Larsson. And bear in mind that Bertel Wedden was connected to Alf Larsson as well. No relation with Stieg Larsson here. Common Swedish last name, L-A-R-S-S-O-N. The following is from the Guardian newspaper of February 27th of 2014. It is by Peter Walker, W-A-L-K-E-R. Olof Palme murder inquiry takes another twist with revoked alibi, and this reads in part, Sweden's national obsession with the unsolved 1986 murder of its then Prime Minister Olof Palme, renewed this week by a revelation that novelist Stieg Larsson helped police with the investigation, has taken yet another twist after it emerged that a key suspect no longer has an alibi for the night in question. Palme, a populist left-wing politician whose views made him numerous enemies at home and abroad, was shot in February of 1986 as he walked home with his wife from a cinema in Stockholm. Almost 30 years of inquiries has seen the focus fall on everyone from South African agents, Palme was a vocal critic of apartheid, to rogue Swedish spies. On Tuesday, a Swedish newspaper revealed that Larsson, the late author of the hugely successful Millennium Trio of crime thrillers and an expert on far-right groups, left 15 boxes of files connected to his own probe into the case. Larsson passed police the name of Bertel, again B-E-R-T-I-L, Wedden, W-E-D-I-N, a Swede with links to South African security services, as the man who organized the killing. Wedden, who now living in northern Cyprus, denies this, and police say he is not a suspect. However, the newspaper, given access to Larsson's files, the Svenska Dagbladet, S-T-E-N-S-K-A-D-A-G-B-L-A-D-E-T, reported on Thursday that its own investigations had brought a new lead about another right-wing activist who was an associate of Wedden. Alf Enerstrom, E-N-E-R-S-T-R-O-M, a doctor and implacable right-wing opponent of Palme who spent time in a psychiatric hospital after shooting a policewoman, was investigated closely by police, but always maintained that at the time of the killing, he was at home with his then-partner, an account she backed up at the time. However, when questioned by Svenska Dagbladet, Gio Gio Petri, P-E-T-R-E, a former actor who separated from Enerstrom in the late 1990s, said this was not the case. On the night of the murder, Enerstrom, in fact, left the flat saying he had to put money in a parking meter, Petri said. She told the paper, quote, I thought it was strange because it was free parking on a Friday night and over the weekend. He came back late, unquote. Asked why she had not said this before, Petri said, quote, I did not dare. I was scared of Alf. He was violent. You are the first people to ask me about this in a long time, unquote. Enerstrom was of interest to the police because he was known to be a gun lover and a vehement critic of Palme. According to Svenska Dagbladet, he told police he saw Palme as a traitor, saying, quote, whoever killed Palme wasn't just doing a service to God, they also did the country a favor, unquote. Petri also told the newspaper she believed her former partner owned a Smith & Wesson revolver at the time, the type of gun police believe was used to shoot Olaf Palme. So that, again, indicating that the late Stig Larsson had been investigating the Palme killing and had cited the name of Bethel Whedon with links to the South African intelligence services and also connected to Alf Larsson, a former Swedish intelligence officer who very much hated Olaf Palme and whose name has cropped up in Henrik Kruger's investigation from 1988. I would note as a little bit of a digression, the Scandinavian fascist milieu that we're talking about here is the same Scandinavian slash Swedish fascist milieu to which Carl Lundstrom belongs. Carl Lundstrom is, a prominent Swedish fascist. He arranged a Scandinavian speaking tour for David Duke, and he was the chief financier of the Pirate Bay site on which WikiLeaks was hosted. So for those of you who are big fans of Julian Assange and company, bear in mind that when you visited the WikiLeaks site, you were visiting a site financed by a prominent Swedish fascist financier who was part and parcel to the milieu I just finished describing, courtesy of the heroic Henrik Kruger. It is a good bet that they were data mining not only of the people who logged into the site, but also any information that was sent to that site. I would also note that, as Julian Assange himself noted, WikiLeaks was associated with the Russian phishing mafia, that's P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. That is the powerful Russian organized crime group that basically they are master internet criminals. And Spam House, that monitors spam, noted that the Russian phishing mafia had set up a mirrored site to WikiLeaks, and so when people visited the WikiLeaks site, if they didn't visit the site financed in part by Carl Lundstrom, part and parcel to the milieu I was just describing, they were visiting the Russian phishing mafia mirrored website. So, again, people should have fun with that. Now, one of the elements in the analysis presented by Henrik Kruger is the Bofors firm. That's B-O-F-O-R-S. That is a prominent Swedish munitions maker. They had been shipping weapons to Iran, And Bofors, in turn, has links to Wacko. Beyond that, Bofors is part of a Swedish industrial and financial milieu that, in turn, had profound links not only to various elite operators who were sympathetic to the Third Reich, including prominent industrialists like the Wallenberg family and Axel Werner Gren. More about him in a second. The Bofors firm also was tied through various industrial relations to Nazi Germany, and Bofors actually had major capital participation by the Krupp armaments manufacturers in Germany. They were made, they for many, many years have been prominent German weapons manufacturers. The head of the firm was called the Cannon King, the Cannon King, and now Krupp is merged with Thyssen Krupp. That is the famous Thyssen heavy industrial concern, originally Veronika Stahlwerke, and the Bush family were deeply involved with the operations of the Thyssen firm. And what we're going to do by way of, I guess you could say, setting the context for Bofors and for the operations that we were looking at in the Henrik Kruger essay from Press of December of 1988, we're going to take a look at the Swedish industrial milieu to which Bofors belonged and the complex series of industrial relationships between those firms and the Third Reich and international fascism in general. We're going to be reading now from a book that is available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. It's called All Honorable Men by James Stuart Martin, published in hardcover by Riffle Brown Books in 1950. And we read, "One of the mysteries of World War II has been the unexplained international relations of the Swedish industrial organization AB Svenska Kullager Fabriken, known as SKF. Sweden's largest industrial concern and the world's largest manufacturer of ball and roller bearings. The principal Swedish interest in SKF is held by the Wallenberg family through their Enskilda Bank and its investment subsidiary AB Investor. The actual extent of German or other foreign control, either directly or through the Wallenbergs, has not been disclosed. For many years, the active management of SKF was in the hands of Sven, S-V-E-N, Winquist, W-I-N-G-Q-U-I-S-T, the founder of the firm. In 1941, Winquist gave up the day-to-day management but remained as chairman of the board of SKF. From time to time, beginning in 1933 and 1934, Sven Winquist came into the world spotlight as one of a colorful clique of international adventurers who gained special notoriety by their buzzing around Edward VIII at the time of his abdication in 1936. Those luminaries included Axel Werner Gren, that's capital A-X-E-L, last name hyphenated, last name capital W-E-N-N-E-R hyphen G-R-E-N, the yachtsman, Charles Bedeau, B-E-D-A-U-X, inventor of a labor speed-up system, and Jacques Lernaigre Dubrenil, L-A-L-E-R-N-A-I-G-R-E hyphen D-U-B-R-E-N-I-L, French banker and vegetable oil man of West Africa. Axel Werner Gren will be remembered as a yachtsman with a remarkable record of coincidences. He cruised the seas throughout much of the war in his yacht, the Southern Cross, and turned up to rescue survivors of German submarine attacks, beginning with the German sinking of the British ship Athenia in 1939, and continuing through the Caribbean submarine campaign of 1942. At the time, some people speculated about how one yacht could happen along so often when a submarine spotted the vessel, but the coincidences were never explained. Sven Winquist and Axel Wenner-Gren had taken an active part after World War I in the German plans to mask the ownership of their subsidiaries abroad. To get around the Versailles Treaty, firms like Carl Zeiss, Z-E-I-S-S, manufacturers of military optical equipment, set up branches such as the Negensco firm, N-E-D-I-N-S-C-O firm at Venlo in the Netherlands, and carried on as before. The Krupp firm did the same in Spain, Sweden, and other countries. In 1934, the Swedish government discovered that Krupp controlled a block of shares in the Bofors Steel and Munitions Works through a Swedish dummy holding company called Bofors Interessenten. That's B-O-F-O-R-S-I-N-T-E-R-E-S-S-E-N-T-E-N.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site also features many articles not included in programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
The aforementioned Sven Wingquist, who was chairman of the board of the Bofors Steel and Munitions Works, was one of the two Swedish citizens who had been voting this stock for Krupp at their stockholders' meetings. The Krupp concern controlled approximately one-third of Swedish Bofors in this manner and had maintained enough additional voting strength through Axel Wenner-Gren to control the affairs of the Bofors company. So again, through stock holdings and Axel Wenner-Gren, the Krupp concern effectively controlled the Bofors firm. Again, today Krupp is called ThyssenKrupp. It has merged with the Thyssen firm, one of the epicenters of the Bormann Capital Network, about which I speak so often. By the way, among his major brands, so to speak, Axel Wenner-Gren was the founder of the Electrolux firm. They manufacture vacuum cleaners, among other things, and I know that many listeners are aware of Electrolux. That was one of Axel Wenner-Gren's affairs. The yacht, the Southern Cross, was widely suspected of actually providing intelligence to German U-boats during World War II, and the various people around Axel Wenner-Gren, Edward VIII, of course, was a Nazi sympathizer, allegedly gave up his, basically gave up his claims to the British throne. He was the heir because he married an American commoner, a woman named Wallace Simpson, but in fact, the evidence suggests he was forced out because of his unabashed sympathies for the Third Reich. I would also note that Charles Badeau, the fellow who developed the labor speed-up, was very much affiliated with some of the American industrialists who were sympathetic to Hitler and Mussolini and who tried to overthrow Franklin Roosevelt in the 1934 coup attempt. We talk about that in For the Record 448 and AFA program number 10. Now, carrying the Bofors firm through the years, we're going to use another book, or excerpt another book that is available for download for free on the Spitfire website. That is Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning. Of this same Nazi-linked Swedish milieu of which Bofors is a part, we read, "An interesting sidelight to the struggle between the Allies and Germany for influence on Sweden is the peculiar role played by Marcus and Jacob Wallenberg, members of Sweden's most important banking family. Marcus headed the government commission which negotiated with Britain and the U.S. throughout the war. At the time, his brother Jacob was the chief negotiator for the Swedish government with Nazi Germany. Thus were both sides covered for Swedish business, including the family's very own substantial economic interests. Following World War II, this family empire was to achieve its most spectacular prosperity as German investments under the Bormann program matured in their Swedish safe havens. In this way, impressive wealth accrued to the Wallenbergs, as well as to the other Swedish and German investment groups controlling large holdings in the many Swedish companies under German dominance in 1944. And that would certainly have included the Wenner Grand assets, including the Bofors firm, which figures in a prominent way again in the investigation into the assassination of Olof Palme. I also find it interesting, the late Stig Larsson, who was investigating the assassination of Olof Palme and had come across some of the same names who crop up in Henrik Kruger's essay. Stig Larsson died of an apparent heart attack at the age of 50, and aside from the fact that heart attacks can certainly be affected by any one of a number of drugs, some of which can be submitted very without a trace and very subtly, I would note that the official version of Stig Larsson's death was that the elevator in the building at which he worked and that to where he was headed had gone out of commission. He then climbed a long flight of stairs and suffered a heart attack. By the way, Stig Larsson was a heavy smoker and apparently did not eat particularly intelligently, which certainly could lead to a fatal heart attack. I personally have known many people that had that sort of unhealthy lifestyle, but who did not die precipitously at the age of 50. One of the things I find interesting is that the Thiessen firm, one of the epicenters of the Bormann Capital Network, the economic component of the Underground Reich, the Thiessen firm has purchased elevators around the world. They bought up Otis Elevator, and you will see Thiessen, that's spelled T-H-Y-S-S-E-N, elevators, all over the world. I wonder, it's pure speculation, but I wonder if perhaps, if for example, elements of the Swedish intelligence service acting in conjunction with the elements that we talked about in this program, if in fact they were involved in the assassination of Olof Palme, the assassination of Stig Larsson, assuming he was killed, they might very well have been able to not only disable the elevator, but perhaps administer a toxin that would have induced a heart attack, which, given Stig Larsson's lifestyle, would not have been all that remarkable. Again, I want to stress that is pure speculation. There may be nothing to it, but given that Stig Larsson was pursuing elements of the same milieu who crop up in these Scandinavian connections to the assassination of Olof Palme, one can but wonder. And if he had 15 boxes of files on the Palme assassination and had fingered some of the people who figured in the milieu that may very well have been involved in it, certainly there were elements would have been as fond of disposing of Stig Larsson as they would have been fond of disposing of Olof Palme. Now again, it is almost 30 years since Olof Palme was assassinated, February 28th, 1986. His killing has never been solved. This is the Prime Minister of a major European country, shot down in the middle of Stockholm. His killing was never solved. I find that very interesting and also more than a little revealing. We have covered a great many elements in this program. I can appreciate that this may have been a difficult program for people to listen to. So many different names, so many different connections. The description for the Henrik Kruger article from Press is in the description for the Record 868, available at the SpitfireList.com website. And it will also be in the description for the Record 869 when it is published later this day. the excerpts from both All Honorable Men by James Stewart Martin and also Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning will also be in the description for 869, as will the Guardian article about Stieg Larsson's investigation of the Palme murder and of the recanting of an alibi for one of the suspects in Palme's murder. That alibi was provided by his lover at the time, who claimed she was frightened of this individual. For background on some of the things that we have been talking about, first of all, AFA Program 14 and 15 deal with WACO, the former World Anti-Communist League, and the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations in particular. The ABN figures very prominently in the background and really the foreground of the development of the elements that are now in power in Ukraine. Talked about that in For the Record 777 and 778, among others. Your reference to Theodore Shackley and his many dealings, his participation in what the Christic Institute's suit called the Secret Team. We talked about that in For the Record programs 29 through 34. The intelligence community's involvement in drug trafficking discussed at great length in AFA programs 24 through 28. There's also some discussion of some of these same elements in the analysis of the downing of Pan Am Flight 103 in AFA program number 35. Some of the Libyan connections are to Theodore Shackley, and Mrs. Purple and Wilson are discussed at great length in AFA program number 4. All of the anti-fascist archive programs are available in their entirety on the SpitfireList.com website. And again, all of those materials are available for download for free. I do hope that younger listeners in particular who really were either not born or not of the age of consciousness when the Iran-Contra affair was going on. Indeed, Olof Palme was assassinated in February of 1986. The Iran-Contra affair blew up later that year. And so if some of the things such as Wackel or the ABN or Theodore Shackley or Operation Condor, if some of these things, the Orlando Letelier assassination, if these things are unfamiliar to members of the listening audience, please use some of these links and programs to educate yourselves. There are numerous other programs as well that deal with some of this. Interviews with Daniel Sheehan, the former chief counsel for the Christic Institute in their suit, now called the Romero Institute. Also, AFA, For the Record, program 522, dealing with the Safari Club, which employed many of these same people, including Theodore Shackley, and which overlaps some of these same networks. And again, all of the relevant documentation will be in the description for the Record 869. Again, available for download for free on the Spitfire website. That will be published later today. Today, by the way, is October 16th of the year 2015, and this concludes For the Record program number 869, the assassination of Olof Palme, part 2. Again, 10/16/2015. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.